inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
It is time for In the Garden with Peter Burke. And our program today is brought to you in part by Menards Agway in Morrisville, Brooklyn Street. The spring sale at Menards is going on until April 26th, and Menards now opens Sundays for the spring, 9 until 1, open 7 days a week. Well, your telephone calls are invited at 244-1777. And it's my great pleasure right now to introduce the host of In the Garden 2024. Here's Peter Burke.
Hey, Joel.
How are you?
Can you hear me okay?
I think so. We have a few wires strung left, right, and thither here. Kind of something new every day to deal with. But
yeah.
I hear you. I think the audience hears you.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I don't hear any sirens, so everything is good.
So what we all been waiting for is that winning lottery ticket? Is that what you're talking about?
That would be nice. Well, no, we need to find out what to do in our gardens, that's for sure.
Well, it's funny. I was reading over my garden prep for spring, and the first line of it says, you know, if you still have snow on your garden, and I thought, oh, well, we don't need to worry about that. And then I heard your weather report.
Yeah, we have some coming overnight a little bit.
So if you still have snow on your garden.
During the eclipse, I was looking at some of the shots that I think Channel 3 was sending in.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And there were some folks up in the Northeast Kingdom sitting in the field looking at the eclipse. They were sitting on snow there, their blanket on snow.
I did see that. I think I saw that on Facebook.
That was great.
Well,
no snow in my backyard, but it does look like a Superfund hazardous waste site at this point. I was thinking of either pulling the either going back and brush hogging or just pull the curtains and ignore it this year.
I think that's probably what I would do myself. But there are signs out there, and you will be very glad to know that the rhubarb is coming hale and hearty.
Wonderful.
I actually posted a picture on Facebook for the DEV Facebook of the little round crowns coming up, and I'll be darned if there weren't a few of them this morning that had green leaves starting to form.
Right. Oh.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part of the early season.
That's what I wanted to tell you, first thing.
Yeah, my daughter's favorite part, my daughter Joya, who was recently just home from Italy, and she just shot back to Italy couple days ago.
Yeah.
And I was hoping the fiddleheads would be real early, but they're just barely.
Just starting
peaking.
To crown a little. Yeah.
Yeah, so we don't have those yet. But bum, before you know it, in 2 weeks, they'll be there.
They'll be there. And the garlic is up.
Yes.
That's good. And the fall planted spinach is peeking its head up, and the snow is no problem for those guys, as you know. Yeah, and one of my garden buddies at the doctor's office, Jeff, he said you have to go to Tractor Supply. I have this succulent sweet spinach that they have there. And you've got to give it a try. So on my way home, that'll be one of my stops, is to so I can see what he's talking about. You know, that's the fun of it, really. He says it's sweet and it grows really well and it stays well. So anyway, I'll have to give it a try. Those things are up. And it's one real advantage of having and using garden beds is that this time of year, as soon as the snow is gone, the beds are dried out. You don't have to worry about waiting for the beds to dry out because first they're raised and second they have all that vermiculite in them and perlite, and that absorbs a lot of the water and slow releases it later on. And so the you know, big advantage, one big advantage for springtime planting is the raised beds, because they do dry out a lot faster than just regular old dirt garden, and makes it well worth it. Makes it easy to go in and scratch a little bit and put your finger in and make a little dimple and drop some seeds in it. So I have, I'm trying some from High Mowing. It's a pelletized, romaine and a pelletized, because the seeds are so small, it's really hard to make sure you could just get one or two in there. And so you kind of get fed up and you just sort of sprinkle them in there. And
I do the same with carrot seeds. Yeah,
yeah, carrot seeds. So I have, and that's the other pelletized seeds I have. I have the pelletized Bolero, which is a storage carrot. Mm-hmm. It's oftentimes 9 inches long and nice and big and round and blunt on the end. And it is a perfect storage carrot. Those will last well into February, without any problem whatsoever. So the pelletized lettuce I'm trying from High Mowing, and the pelletized, Bolero carrots from Johnny's Seed. I've used the carrot seeds for years, and I find it's really helpful because they're sort of whitish, you know. It's a clay covering, and so I just just drop one in each little hole. I use a finger and make 16 little divots, you know, 4 by 4 by 4, and so I plant 16 carrots in a 1 square foot. And that's that 1 square foot would be equal to, 16-foot row, and with your pathways on either side of it, it could be as much as 30 square feet for the same thing you're going to plant in 1 square foot. So that really is a nice advantage to the grid planting and. And so I, when I plant those carrots, I'm sorry I got off the subject from lettuces into carrots, but when I plant those carrots, I'll actually plant a whole 4x4, 256 carrots. Ooh. And so that's for storage, or also for my different recipes that we use the carrots for. It would be like kimchi, we like to make the kimchi. And then I use them also for my soup stock. I dry those things for soup stock. So there's a lot to do, yeah. The first thing, of course, is to, make sure all the roots and anything, any litter that's stems, stalks, roots, whatever, all those are dug up and out of the garden. Because a lot of time your diseases and your bugs will find homes in that litter. And sort of inoculate your vegetables and cause trouble for you.
Last year seemed to be a rather tough year for invasive insects that came into the gardens in my neighborhood. And I'm just reflecting on the fact,
Joel,
that it was a very warm.
Oh, how quickly you will forget.
Yeah. And this was such a warm winter. I'm just wondering what has been incubating.
Every year has its challenges, and everything goes in cycles. Some years the Japanese beetles will just murder my beans, and it all goes in cycles, so you just have to prep for it and be ready for it.
Of course, I'm in my world with my love of all furry critters, mm-hmm. and I don't even the scaly critters I'm kind to.
Yeah. So have the
I have to start everything inside, even my sunflowers. Yep. I can't even put a sunflower seed in the ground without having somebody take it right up.
So do you put the menu out for the critters?
Oh, they know.
Say, we'll take a little sunflower. Yeah. I really like that.
They really
lettuce.
Know.
Joel, the carrots. You got to get the carrots in there.
The carrots, I actually was lucky, but they love to take the tops off, and then they dig what's underneath as well.
Well, I remember one year I had my bed of 256 carrots, right, and I pulled up one, and it was about an inch stump. And I thought, oh, no. And they had eaten probably a good quarter of the carrots, you know, and these were my storage carrots. Of course, they're nice and big and fat. So I had some really big, fat chipmunks someplace.
Well, I've always had, you know, the bunnies, and they're cute bunnies. And when my kids were little, they just loved, loved seeing all the bunnies. It was just the last 2 years, and it's a different species, I'm sure, because not only do I have the what I call rabbits, I've got these big hares or whatever you want, but like they're twice the size, and they jump twice the height, and I'm pretty sure they eat twice as much.
Yeah, they have those big back feet, and they're a little browner than
And they come, because I've got a lot of, you know, undeveloped property alongside my place, you know. my neighbor very wisely has this big buffer area between his place and mine.
Yeah. You know?
But it's a home for God knows what lives out there. I've seen everything. Yeah. I've seen everything come out of there. My raccoon family is always out there. And what do you call those really wild cats that are out there? And foxes. Yeah.
Yep.
They're all there, you know, part of the ecosystem, all waiting for their for me to plant my vegetables.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I have a fair amount of work to do in my gardens today, but most of them are in pretty good shape. I've got a couple new beds I'm going to reorganize a little bit. And but I, you know, I had that house fire, and it was almost two summers of not being able to get in and do a lot just because the time of driving, you know, from the house we were living in back to the house and then to work and all that other stuff. So my son Jake and I covered all of our beds, the wooden, you know, squares, the wooden beds with black plastic. So that will take care of some of the perennial weeds that have come to live there. Matter of fact, that was one of my best harvests last year, was the was one of the weeds that we could eat, like spinach, you know.
Yeah, foraging is just a wonderful, wonderful activity that so many people, I mean, I listen to a lot of different programs, not necessarily garden programs, but hear more people this past year talking about finding edible things to eat. And, of course, I'm extremely careful.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't touch a mushroom unless a true expert told me that it was okay.
Yeah. So this morning when I got up and looked out the window there, of course, was the compost bin on its side.
Isn't it nice when it kind of smokes a little bit? Things are working well.
Things are working well. Well, I was surprised at how much the bear ate out of that compost bin. I mean, I set it back up, and I was looking around and said, boy, you know, he really chowed down, you know. And I make a no-knead bread, and I hadn't used the second batch. So I thought, well, it was time to, you know, move it on and start a new batch. And I put the dough in the bin, and apparently that was just too irresistible for
a delicacy.
A delicacy.
Yeah.
Oh, bread.
It's like us, it would be like one of us going to Klinger's, you know,
right.
The bear going to your compost pile.
Yeah, well, he ate well last night, that I can tell. He's probably sleeping it off right now.
Well, we certainly want to encourage our listeners at 802-244-1777 or any early season questions for Peter.
Yeah.
I had somebody ask me a question. I was playing that great Tony Joe White song, Poke Salad Annie, you know, and about, you know, going out there harvesting the poke salad.
Poke salad.
Is down in Louisiana.
Yeah, yeah.
But someone said, is there any poke salad or whatever the plant is that grows in New England?
Yeah. Yeah,
there is.
Yeah, there's a variety. And I got curious, and I think you and I talked about this last year. I was watching these YouTube videos about the poke salad, you know, and poke plants. And it's a green sort of like, what would you call it? Sort of like a maybe a spinach or collards or any of those greens like that. So the poke weed. You got a caller?
It sure is. In fact, it is Nancy in Morrison. Let's see if I could get the first caller on the air before they start calling me Thumbs Joel here. And we'll put so Nancy in Morrisville on the air.
Hey, Nancy. Welcome. Can you
hear? Thank you. And, gosh, glad to have the show back on the air.
Yeah,
I do have a couple of questions for you folks.
Okay.
I have an old straw bale that was sitting since last year.
Okay.
I'm curious to try something like maybe a tomato plant in that. Is that safe, or does that harbor too much fungus and mold and all kinds of undesirables?
Well, there's several problems with that. I'm not saying that you can't do it, because usually the straw bale technique is with new bales of straw.
Okay, yeah.
And a lot of times they actually use hay bales. But I don't encourage it, just only because I think the best way to use straw is as a mulch on your, you know,
right,
on your beds.
I've done that, and this is leftover. So
yeah, and you do have just a whole bunch of molds that are growing in there. And so, in a way, you're putting it in, you're preceding the molds and stuff that can affect your plants. I won't say that you can't do it, you know, because it the plants want to grow, and the question is, will they grow well? So, do you have any garden beds?
Oh, I do. Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
So you were
thinking
of just putting a big pile of this stuff on one of those beds, or were you thinking of using it as a bed separate?
No, I was going to use it as a separate bed, just because I have limited growing area. I have 8 beds that are 8 feet by 4 feet, and approximately a foot deep.
That's eight beds, eight by four.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of beds. You got a lot. You got
lot
to.
Yeah, I've had good luck in the past, so I won't mess with that old straw bale. It was sitting there, and I'm looking at it, and like, can I still use this?
Well, let's talk about using it. Do you have a compost bin?
Not really.
Oh, okay. All right. I was going to say it would be perfect for your compost bin and would decompose really well. So then I would use it as a mulch, you know, and it'll dry out enough that you won't have too many.
Oh, okay. All right. I'd rather use it safely. So that's a really good idea, because it's left over from the straw mulch that I put over the compost that I put in last year. Okay. So another thought. There is an invasive weed that is getting into my ornamental bed, which is in the ground. I have daylilies and various other plants. It might be called Virginia creeper. I'm not really sure. But my question is, would it be safe to sort of paint an organic weed killer onto those leaves and not have it destroy the plants next to it?
Yeah. It would be careful work, but I'm sure you can do it. Matter of fact, the company that makes the Captain Jack's dead bug,
right,
now makes a product called Captain Jack's Weed Killer, and
it
kills the plant that it is sprayed on. So if you're careful about it, and it's some acid that is completely organic, and it's not, you know, it decomposes quickly. But if you're careful about it, you know, you could definitely wind your way around your plants, and they would die back.
Wow, that's good news. What I have is, if the manufacturer is Espoma, organic weed and grass killer.
Yep.
So I could essentially take a small paintbrush and paint it on the weed leaves, and it will not harm my daylilies.
Yeah, they're a great company. Definitely, yeah. There's no reason you couldn't do
all
that.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and happy gardening.
Well, thank you, Nancy, and same to you.
Thank you.
I hope to hear from you again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you.
And then we have, Norm from Bristol. Hey, Norm, you there?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I have, I was waiting for you to come back on, I had two questions.
Sure.
And then I thought of another one, so I'll run and by you as quickly as I can, because I'm sure that's more people want to call in.
You go right ahead.
All right. When's the best time to spray fruit trees? Because I have quite a few different types of fruit trees that are in blossom. Not in blossom, but they're in bud stage.
Yeah. Well, that's the first spray is, is the miscible oil, and you want to spray that real soon. You don't want to do that right now.
What kind of oil was that?
It's a miscible oil, and that you spray the whole tree, the bark, and everything. And that's the first spraying of the season. So
I can do that anytime now then.
Yeah. And then there's another spray when the blossoms. What kind of trees are we talking about anyway? Are we talking about apples?
Oh, pears, apples, fig trees, all kinds of things, grapes.
Fig trees too, huh?
Yeah, I got one fig off of it last year.
God
bless
you.
And it was like a zillion blossoms on, because you have to have two varieties, different varieties.
Yeah, you have to have something to pollinate.
Yeah, I'm just looking at them.
Yeah, the first spray is the dormant, and that's a
dormant spray. Yeah,
the dormant. And that treats your fire blight and mites, and then it's a horticultural oil. I've always known it as miscible oil, but when you go to look for it, it may be called horticultural oil. So you could try that. And I would emphasize, Norm, that these sprayings that you do in these first three or four weeks are the most important. The most important sprays of the whole season, because prevention is the best medicine, So the second spraying is when you see the green tips, when they start to, before the blossom end, but when this is the first green tips are about half inch, and that controls the scab and other diseases. And that's...
You're talking about the leaves, right?
No, these are the buds. When the buds...
Oh, the buds.
Yeah, the buds start to just...
Open
a little bit. So you're starting with the dormant oil in the dormant stage when the buds first start to swell. And then you go ahead and go with the... when the green tip, and this is before the bud or the flower, okay?
Before
the bud of flower. And that's, again, you can use a miscible oil, the horticultural oil, or surround. These are fungicides.
Yeah.
And then the next one, of course, is when the first bud. And that's, again, the same thing, surround. Or any sulfur spray. And then
sulfur spray is the third or fourth?
That's the third one. So it would either be sulfur with surround, and that's an organic one.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Okay. And then there's another one called agromycin is what it's called. But it just, go to Agua Blue Seal, one of those sponsors, and take a look and see what they have for organic sprays. Because, when I first started, I was 17 years old when I started doing organic farming, gardening. And we had none of these things available to us. It was all sort of, let's try and figure this out kind of thing. But now there are so many good organic controls, both for the funguses and for the insects, that there's no reason not to go ahead and spray because, as I said, these first four sprayings are critical. You know, they're very important, four or five sprayings. And those will take you right up to when the fruit is set. And then, so that's also the same thing, the surround and sulfur. So these are the different mileposts. There's dormant, the green tip, the white bud or the blossom, and then when the petals fall from the blossoms, and then once the fruit is set. What is that? That's five sprays, not four. So those are the most critical ones that, you know, on their own time frame. And this is true for pears or plums or apples or all of them is these are all the same kind of mileposts that you can use to spray, you know, whether it's cherries or any of those things. But spraying them, these first five sprayings will make all the difference in the quality of the fruit by the time September comes around and you're harvesting. Okay, that was question number one.
Yes. I raise ever-bearing raspberries.
Okay.
And I have for years. I'm right in the time of the year where I'm cutting the ever-bearers down close to the ground.
Yeah.
Now, I was wondering if I have early raspberries, but they seem to be waning. I don't know if it's the soil needs some replenishing, or I'm going to do that. I've never had to do it before, and I've been doing picking raspberries for 20, 25 years.
Yeah. Well, your soil's tired, that's all. You know, you need to replenish it, definitely. Use a good organic, any good organic fertilizer, and just put it on according to instructions. I know ProGrow's got instructions for fruits, and this is the time to do it. You're right on time. You're perfect. And then, of course, you know, I'm sure you're pruning out the old wood and stuff like that. You're doing all that stuff. Yeah, if you've been doing it that many years. But, yeah, it sounds like your soil's tired. The other thing you might consider is a compost tea. I don't know if you've ever used anything like that, a compost tea.
I've heard you talk about that before.
Yeah. I'll talk a little bit more about that after your next question.
Okay.
Okay. I want to make sure I get your third question in here.
Well, I've got the I was wondering with the raspberries, would I be able to grow two crops from those everbearers, like
it's
leave
possible.
Some of them at 3 foot?
Yeah, it's possible. But that's a lot depends on the weather. And, you know, it's going to be luck. You know, if you get two crops out of it, you've been lucky.
I'm just experimenting with a few canes this year.
Yeah. There's no harm in trying it because, you know, what's the worst is you won't get a crop, right?
that's why I'm just, you know, leaving a few like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have one more quick question.
Okay.
I went down to get something for invasive plants.
Yeah.
And I went to Paris Farms down here in Middlebury.
Sure.
And they didn't have the product I wanted, so they said, well, you can use vinegar.
Yeah, that's true.
A real strong vinegar solution.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
The one I mentioned there, the Captain Jack's weed.
That's the one I wanted to get.
The weed killer,
Didn't even know what it was.
It's an acid, and the name escapes me. Citric, cystic, I'd have to look it up again, but it's an acid that basically just kills the plant that it's sprayed on. And once you do that, you know, it breaks down very quickly. And vinegar would be, you know, real similar to that.
Okay, so they spray it according to the directions then?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
So one of the things I wanted to go back to is I'm actually trying a new way to compost. And, of course, you know, that every year at least once I get the bear comes in and knocks over my knee, you know. And it's
my granddaughter's had one get into her compost. They had it plywood over it, and it reached up and pulled the plywood right off the side of the building.
You know how big they are? They're big, you know. You get a big bear, and
they're very powerful.
They're very powerful, yeah. And I once heard it was on one of the DEV talk shows, and the Agency of Natural Resources, the fellow was on. He says, okay. And he was talking about mostly about the leaving your bird feeders out in the spring. And he said, okay, let's put this on a human scale. Let's say that you had a bush out behind, you know, off your deck, and you hung $100 bills on it. How long do you figure those $100 bills would stay there?
Yeah.
So that little compost bin is a pot of gold. And which brings me to a composting method that I have just started with, and so far it's been really good, and it's called the Bokashi method, B-O-K-A-S-H-I.
You know what we're going to do, Peter?
Oh, you want to take a break?
And our guest as well, you can hang on the line. We're going to make that a tease, you know, because...
Next up, Bokashi.
Our program today is brought to you by the good folks at Menards in Morrisville, where you can find just about everything you need for the start of the gardening season. And on top of it, they're having their great spring sale continued.
Dreaming of warm soil and bees buzzing? Hi, this is Tiffany at Menards Family True Value. We are busy getting ready for spring, and we hope you are too. We've got all the flower and veggie seeds you could want, and the soils, tools, and supplies to get your garden started at family-owned and operated Menards Family True Value. Open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 8 to 4, and closed Sundays, Brooklyn Street, Morrisville. Remember to fill up that grill tank for $14.99 or a 100-pound propane tank for $79.99.
WDEV also serves the Northeast Kingdom at 101.9 W270BR Island Pond.
You can check at Menards, see if they have any bear repellent. You know, my granddaughter wants to see a bear, but she thinks they're going to be those bright red ones and the bright blue ones that you see on the toilet paper commercials, you know. not the black ones that come
in
the red.
Not blue, bare necessities.
Yeah, exactly.
The
yeah.
simple things of life, right? Yeah.
Those are nice bears. But,
those are nice bears.
Yeah. At any rate, let me step out and let the real information be disseminated.
Well, you know, we do need a humorous break, too, you know, Joel.
I've got a humorous story for you.
Sure, shoot.
A friend of mine came to visit me one day, and he was telling me about having trouble with his bird feeders, and he's quite sure it was a bear that was doing it. And he lost, maybe 4 or 5, something like that.
Yeah.
One day he's looking out his window where the bird feeder was, and there's a bear tearing one down.
Yeah.
So he goes out, the bear grabs it and starts dragging it up to the base of the mountain, which is right in back of his house.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, well, I'm not following the bear up that hill because it was so steep. I'll go around to the end where the mountain kind of tapered down. And he said, I followed it up there, and guess what I found? All his bird feeders.
So
I thought that was pretty humorous. He wasn't too happy. But.
So you were able to bring him back, and then you could set him up, and he would steal it, and you'd put the other one up, and he'd steal that one.
Oh, yeah. Right back to work. I won't keep you. I know you have people.
In that vein, this Bokashi method, you use two 5-gallon buckets, and they're made special. They have a spigot in the bottom, and then they have one of those screw tops. You've probably seen those at Aubergines. And it's got it's a little stand, probably about 2 inches high at the very, very bottom. And you put your food scraps down on that, and then you sprinkle on this stuff to inoculate them. And I actually do this right in the back hall of the house. It doesn't stink. When you open it up, it's just a slight vinegar fragrance, but not, you know, nothing, you know, like it would be, you know, rotted or anything like that that you get from the compost bin. So, and so you put about 2 inches at a time, which is, for me, it's about one of my 1 gallon compost buckets. You know, we keep right by the sink and fill it up, and it usually takes us about a week and sometimes two, depending on what we're cooking. You put that in, you sprinkle the stuff on it, and you put you push it down so it, you've got this lid sort of thing, what would you call it, a pusher, you know, you push down on it so it's, you know, it's held in there, it's really nice and tight, and then you close it up, you put the screw lid back on, and then so you, next time, the next week, you open it up, you take that little pressure plate out, you put your other 2 more inches of compost, you sprinkle on a little more inoculant, you put the pressure plate back down, push it down, screw it on. So over, I got about a little over about 10 to 14 days worth in one bucket. So the kit that I got has 2 buckets. So you put that one down and you put the empty one back up and you do the same thing. And so this takes 10 days to decompose. And after that 10 days, you take it out and you dig it right into your soil, your garden soil. And so at no point, you know, is the compost or the garbage, whatever you want to call it, it's never like out in the open and available. It's covered with dirt. Now, I haven't seen, and there's a possibility that the bear might try to dig it up. I don't know whether that would happen or not, but I'm from the literature, it says that that's not going to happen because it's a different kind of decomposition, and there aren't the kind of odors that you get from a compost bin. And one of the other things, and why I was mentioning the compost tea, was that the reason there's a spigot at the bottom of this is that over the course of filling that up, you know, it you know, drips this tea liquid down into the bottom of the 5 gallon. You turn that on, and the first one that I did, I got 3 pints. And depending on whether you're doing house plants or garden plants, you know, it's a 1 to 50 ratio. I mean, it's probably just like your fish or your seaweed. Liquid fish or liquid seaweed. It's about 4 tablespoons per 5 gallons. So, you know, it goes pretty far. And so that's one of the things I was thinking about. The compost tea is really easy to make. You know, of course, you just take a compost or whatever you happen to have, compost. Also, you can do one, you can chop a mixture of compost and comfrey if you have comfrey. Chop that up and put it in, and then you just fill the 5 gallon bucket up. You know, you put about 4 pounds of stuff down on the bottom, and then you just take that off and use it to water your plants. So that's another way to boost those raspberries. Taking it back to the reason I brought this up.
Is that you put any water in the pail though to start?
Not to start with, no. This is all the moisture.
It'll break down on its own.
Breaks down on its own. And it's, you know, it's sort of a brownish color, you know, kind of a chocolate brown. And, you know, my wife took some into the office so she could, you know, give her plants there a little boost. So, anyway, that's another thing to consider besides that. And then you can also use this as a foliar spray. You know, you've done with your first harvest, give them a good foliar spray or you know, put it on the roots, and that'll give it a boost.
I have one more quick question about raised beds.
Yeah.
I was talking with a lady friend of mine yesterday.
Yeah.
And she started a raised bed, and she said she put stones on the bottom of the soil
of
the raised bed for drainage.
Uh-huh.
Is that a good idea?
No. No need to do that at all. That's a practice that you would do for your houseplants. That's, you know, usually at the bottom you put the stones down in and then put your soil on that but there's no need to do that in a garden bed whatsoever.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll tell her about that. All right.
She'll probably call me up and give me a heck.
But... Well, I thought, you know, after last year, there was some of my plants seemed like they got drowned by all the rain we had.
You know, and that's exactly what I was thinking. She's probably thinking about drainage. But better than the drainage is tell her to make sure she puts some of the vermiculite and the perlite in that bed, and that will do better than the stones because it actually will both absorb and it will release. So it takes the extra water and then it releases the extra water when the plants need it.
Oh, vermiculite. I'll tell her about that.
Okay. All right, buddy. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
All right.
Okay, Joel, we have, John. We got John in Waterbury, huh?
Yeah, good afternoon. It's great to know that spring is here. We've got both Peter and Joel shouting the words from the bears on through. I have a couple of quick questions.
Sure.
First of all, with the Bokashi method, do you find any issues with fruit flies when you're adding material?
Not at all. So far, we have had no fruit flies or any other kind of bugs or critters problem with it. Now, you know,
Do you need some?
What's that?
I said, do you need some?
No, I'm flush with fruit flies.
Okay.
I'm done just fine. Thank you very much.
Okay. It's the most abundant crop I seem to have over time.
Yeah, you can't make a fruit fly cake or something.
Well, yeah, we use a lot of vinegar and stop and clean the containers out quite a bit. But that's an ongoing challenge.
It is.
One of my more recent experiences, I'm wondering if you've seen this, ticks in the carbon-rich dried leaves. Have you had any experience with, you know, trying to suppress the odors in any of your compost bins and finding ticks in among the leaves and transferring around?
Frankly, the ticks are just about any place they can find a home, and they're going to be everywhere, and we just have to be very aware of the fact that there are ticks out there, and they're going to jump on you. So,
I think I find
them in dry leaves as much as the grass. Matter of fact, more often than the grass.
Yeah, so. I think that's a really good cautionary tale for all your listeners because they are out there, and. That is something that you need to be careful and aware of, and that's important.
I know. It really ticks me off, too.
So to speak.
So to speak.
Okay. Well,
thank you very much. Thank you for the call, and I agree. It's good to be back.
Okay. We're gonna get you both one of those collars that I have on my dog, and that'll keep you both safe.
Right. There you go.
Okay. I think we've got Ann.
And
no, wait. We've
Barry?
Got Barry. Barry first. Okay. Barry first. Here we go. Here we go. Barry, you're on.
Yes.
Hey.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Hey, good. Hey, I got a real simple question.
Sure.
I know you guys can answer, and that is, I have moss growing in my garden and in my lawn.
Yeah.
Is that because the soil is too acid or
just
basic?
It's too acid, right. It's too acid.
Too acid.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
That's
ash and lime.
Yep.
It will help to eliminate the moss.
If you wanted to get real technical, you could do a pH test and, you know, apply according to the instructions. Basically, I would just put some lime on and see if it works and put some more if it still is a problem. That would be my approach.
That's what I kind of remember of 40 years ago, but I'm getting old, on in age, and I wanted to verify it.
Okay. Barry, thanks
Thank
for the call.
Much.
Yeah. So do you have Ann on the line there?
Yes.
Hey,
Good
Ann.
Good afternoon. Yes, well, I have a real problem.
Okay.
I am told that we cannot have a garden for 2 years. This makes a third time. A raccoon pond has come down onto us, and we've got stones everywhere. If anyone wants some beautiful stones that are smooth all around, they can come get them free.
Yeah.
No, our lawn, we don't even have a lawn. I'm not kidding.
You just have stones and mud?
Oh, yes. It's just, and they said that the raccoon, when they do something like that, you cannot use your garden for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and our son made a beautiful, you know, fence around it and everything, and now we can't even have a garden.
I'm sorry, but you can have a garden. I lost one of my gardens. I had 18 beds right next to the house, and when we had the house fire a couple years ago, we did an addition to the house, and that took care of the that's when I lost the garden first. But I have another 24 beds up on a terrace right up above the house, and that was my first garden to start with anyway. Mm-hmm. But to replace the produce that I got from the other garden, I've started to use containers. And containers are a blast. And I use the a couple of different kinds of containers. One is like a tower. It has 30 cells in it, and it stands about 5 foot tall. And it's not very expensive, and you can even get them in pink now. But anyway, and they are very productive. I've been really pleased. I've grown herbs in it, parsley, sage, rosemary and thyme, basil. I've grown even kohlrabis. I have the smaller varieties of cabbage and the smaller variety of romaine lettuce and bib lettuce. All of those things, radishes for sure, you could grow a tomato plant in that if you figured out how to support it. You know, you'd have to put a pole or something right next to it to support it as it grows. What I used was actually my deck railing, and I grew the tomatoes along one rail and then the zucchini plants along another rail.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So those are actually a very, as a matter of fact, Ed Smith, the Gardener's Bible, wrote a wonderful book on container gardening. And I would recommend it. He doesn't show that tower that I was talking about. That's a fairly new invention. And they're priced right. And if my other containers, I have the other ones, it's called Garden Patch. And then there's, of course, the Earth Box. But the Garden Patch one, for me, I like best. I found that is easier to fill. These things have a 4-gallon reservoir. So, you once a week you take your hose and you just fill up that reservoir. And everything's very happy because if it's really hot, you might even have to do it, every 10 days instead.
Right.
Or, I mean, every 5 days instead of every 7 days.
But this wouldn't rot the wood on our porch? No.
No, and there's a couple of things you can do. They have these, there's trays that you could get, and there's even have trays that have wheels on them.
Oh.
So they have it goes when you pour the water into the top of that thing, it goes down through, and then it this is the tower one I'm talking about, and
right.
Then it sits in the tray, and there's a little hose you can put, and that'll drain off the side of the deck, and the other ones, the earth box or the the garden patch, either one of those, they're just like a big tray, There's no, it doesn't leak out or anything like that.
Probably Gardenway has it, right? Expensive.
they might. They might have them. What I've found is the Earth Box is the most popular around, but the Garden Patch is just growing. Is just online. If you just Google the Garden Patch.
Oh, good.
And you can get them in colors.
Wow. Well, thank you ever so much.
Yeah, and they're very productive. I'm, you know, this is not like it's just a toy garden. I mean, you can grow. As a matter of fact, I just saw a picture yesterday, a few days ago, with somebody who did grew corn in them, and I think they did 10 ears of corn.
Oh my goodness!
In each one of these garden patch, you know, and it's about 30 inches by a foot. So it's not huge or anything, but yeah, you can get a very productive. You can grow all the lettuces and all the tomatoes and all the zucchini and all whatever it is you want to grow. So you don't have to not garden.
Good.
And after your 2 years, you'll probably say, "Hey, you know." And it's interesting the when these first came out, I was reading about it because. A fella down in Florida who wanted to convert all of his tomato plants to organic, and he hit that same problem that you had. In order to do organic, you have to, you know, wait 3 years. You can't use the soil. Mm-hmm. So he bought 1,500 of these garden patch.
Oh, my goodness.
And he grew his tomatoes in there. And he said, by God, I use a lot less water because down in Florida, it's really sandy soil. So you're pumping water up 24/7.
Sure.
Whereas this one, you know, you just turn on the hose and water all of them, and there was a 4-gallon reservoir, and he grew just as many, and they were all organic, and he was absolutely tickled. Now, well, I'm not suggesting that you buy a 1,500 of them.
No, well, that sounds great. But, you know. Especially if you have a knee problem, too. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, thank you ever so much.
You're very welcome,
really,
man.
Really appreciate it.
Enjoy, and please let me know how it goes.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sure thing, yep.
Okay, thank you, Ann. We had two people call just to ask specifically, why can't you use your garden after the raccoons have made their appearance?
Yeah, I would assume that it's the bacterial count, you know, plus, you know, of course, the stones that come down through. But I assume it's the bacteria. You know, there's probably E. coli in there. And it would be just like throwing fresh pig manure on it. You just the risk of making yourself sick is really high.
Yeah, that's how I understand it. Okay, we will have our final call. But once again, we want to thank our fine sponsor.
What? Yeah, Joel? Is it really?
Yeah, look at it. It's 1:26, and we have take a little break for our fine sponsors. And among them, the first major sponsor to hop on board on our program is Menards Agway. Menards True Value Store now in Morrisville. Yeah. Got to get that right. And just about everything that you would want to have, you'll find right there on Manhattan Drive in Morrisville, as they are there with their spring sale continuing.
Store.
That's right. Here we go.
Dreaming of warm soil and bees buzzing? Hi, this is Tiffany at Menards Family True Value. We are busy getting ready for spring, and we hope you are too. We've got all the flower and veggie seeds you could want, and the soils, tools, and supplies to get your garden started at family-owned and operated Menards Family True Value. Open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 8 to 4, and closed Sundays, Brooklyn Street, Morrisville. Remember to fill up that grill tank for $14.99 or a 100-pound propane tank for $79.99.
We have Richard in Williamstown, so this is our penultimate caller.
He snuck in under the wire.
If I get this button right, I knew it was going to happen if I didn't push that one, and I do believe.
Oh, stretching so much.
You're on the air.
Hey, Richard. I need to say hi to Kathy and Barry, and because she's had told my wife that she's a fan, and I just wanted to say that I thank you. That's very nice of you to listen, and I appreciate it. And, Richard, what you got going?
Okay, I'm wondering, when we start seeds, I end up with real leggy plants.
Uh-huh.
They grow 3, 4, 6 inches
before
they come to the first leaf.
Yeah, very, very common problem. What are you using? Explain to me how you're starting these seeds.
Potting soil in pea pots.
Okay. Yeah. And so once you see the leaves come up, what do you do with them?
Let the sun shine on them, I guess.
You put them in the windowsill? Or?
In the, where they get sunlight from the outdoors.
Yeah. Okay. So those seeds, when they come up, they need 16 hours of full light. Okay. So you really need to get yourself a light bulb. And you can use a common fluorescent bulb. There are so many LED lights available. If you go to Fruition Seeds online, she has a light that she absolutely adores. It's an LED, and she uses it quite a bit for her starts. Fruition Seeds. And of course, I'm not so sure. I'll have to check at Agway to see if they have a light. They may have a light, an LED light, but the point is wherever you get it, you know, you need to have 16 hours of light for those to be nice, sturdy stalks. They will be leggy, and that's just a given. You can't get away with that unless you have that kind of light for them. I bought myself a cart, at Johnny's. It was expensive, but it'll do 6 trays, you know, the 10x20 trays. I finally decided, and you know, my thinking was I almost always buy my sets because I can't come up to the quality that I get from Kate Farm or any of the others. And so, the main thing was is if I was going to do it, I was going to need the lights. And so that's why I bought those lights. But for years, I've just used, you know, the 4-foot shop light, you know, with a couple of fluorescents. And
so the light just needs to be fairly close to them?
Yeah, about 3 inches away. So they're close. And then you just keep it 3 inches away as as they grow. And I would use just, you know, I had bricks and I would raise it up to 2 inches at a time with the bricks underneath it. Nothing too fancy. So now I'm, I'm first class now because I got that cart because it's perfect. You just have a couple of knobs and you lower and raise the big lights and it works really well. But that's your key right there. You got to have 16 hours of light, bright light.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you.
Sounds like a definite plan. Thanks. Yeah. My cat likes to sleep under my grow light, so she's growing, so that's a good sign. We've had a lot of fun today, and it would not be the premier In the Garden program if we did not hear from Nola.
Oh, good. I was wondering. Nola.
Hey.
What do you got for us today?
I have huge, gigantic gratitude for your show, for both of you.
Thank you.
And for the blessing of being able to help plants grow.
Yep.
I don't agree with Mr. Mallet in his song. We don't make the garden go. We help the garden grow. But
you'll have to forgive him. It probably rhymes.
Oh, I do, because it's a great song. But following a 2-month confusing stint back to brain tumorville. I don't know why the doctor thought it was. I didn't. Having plants in the greenhouse, pushing up out of the soil through snowstorms, giant winds, and seeing them growing. Oh, what a gift. What a gift. You see those plants and you think that's hope, that's resilience. That's
couldn't agree with you more. There's nothing more exciting for me to see that red head come up. The rhubarb, you know, it's just like, oh, wow, look at it.
I know.
And then the garlic pops up.
Yeah.
But I have snowdrops, you know, and they follow the foundation all around. And they're huge right now. But they've been up for a month anyway.
Yep. And so
all
go
those
ahead,
things.
Speak. No, it's just a gift.
Yeah.
It's such a gift to be able to watch these things happen.
Agreed.
And I know you guys are time to get out of the way, although you're getting out of Joel's way, so it doesn't matter, right?
That's what everybody says.
I have 2 gifts, if I can. One from Robert Frost and one from Cat Stevens.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. So I'll give you the frost poem. I've shared this before, but maybe somebody that's out listening hasn't heard it. Putting in the seed. Do you come to fetch me from my work tonight when supper's on the table, and we'll see if I can leave off from burying the soft white petals fallen from the apple tree. Soft petals, yes, but not so barren quite. Mingled with these, smooth bean and wrinkled pea, and go along with you ere you lose sight of what you came for and become like me. Lave to the springtime passion for the earth, how love burns through the putting in the seed, and on through the watching for the early birth, when just as the soil tarnishes with weed, a sturdy seedling with arched body comes, shouldering its way and shedding the earth crumbs. It's good.
I like the arched shoulder. I think that's pretty cute.
It's what they do.
It's true. It's so great.
And then I just found this song. I'm not going to sing it. Don't worry. We don't want to lose all the listeners. But I'll only give you the first verse. Okay. Apparently, Mr. Cat Stevens wrote this back in the 1960s.
Wow.
And we'll get the words together on it. Mm-hmm. But it's called Locally Grown.
Really?
If I were an apple, I'd be very unhappy. Traveling 4,000 miles or more from far off Tasmania. hold on. From far off Tasmania in a shipping container to a shelf in a New Jersey store. Why should I be tortured when some New Jersey orchard would be totally thrilled to the core to pick me up and crate me and load me and freight me? Not 4,000 miles, but four. Isn't that great?
That is for locally grown. Boy, I'm with you 100%.
And of course, locally grown and locally eaten is globally good.
I love
good for
the
us all.
Thrilled so, to the core.
Yeah,
that
I
was
know.
Good.
Well, that's Cat Stevens. He knows these things. So I say let's keep growing good food because yes. It not only nourishes your body, but
we'll be thrilled to the core.
Well.
Absolutely. Nola, thank you again. And
thank you.
I'm glad we're back, and it's so nice to talk to everyone. It's a real blast.
We will be back with, sorry to interrupt, but Peter's final words after once again a word from Menards and our fine accompanying sponsor.
Dreaming of warm soil and bees buzzing? Hi, this is Tiffany at Menards Family True Value. We are busy getting ready for spring, and we hope you are too. We've got all the flower and veggie seeds you could want, and the soils, tools, and supplies to get your garden started at family-owned and operated Menards Family True Value. Open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 8 to 4, and closed Sundays, Brooklyn Street, Morrisville. Remember to fill up that grill tank for $14.99 or a 100-pound propane tank for $79.99.
Well, it's our debut in the garden for 2024, and Peter, some final words?
Well, first, thanks for listening. I really appreciate that. And calling in. That's a lot of fun. But as Lee said, it's grow time, and there's so many things to plant to start with. You know, lettuces, radishes, spinaches, even a lot of your kohl, you know, cabbage, kale, certainly kale. Little early for cauliflower, but beets and carrots. So it's grow time. It's time to start planting. And we'll see you next week. Thanks.
In the garden.